Welcome to this episode of the Ghost Stories podcast. We are coming to you very soon after the budget speech in South Africa, which is obviously a really interesting time for all of us. And I think this 2026 budget speech has been quite different, actually. My overview of it is that it feels like it's a bit more pro-growth, maybe a bit more pro-business. We are in a GNU environment now, so winds of change seem to have been blowing a little bit at least. And to help us understand some of the key elements of this budget speech, I'm joined today by Tertius Truist. He is the Associate Director in the Tax Consulting Team at Forvis Mazars. He's also no stranger to the Ghost Mail audience because we had a very similar podcast last year. So Tertius, thanks so much for doing this with me again in 2026, and I can't wait to get your thoughts on this budget.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks for having me.
No, it's going to be good. So look, there's a lot of stuff we can talk about here. And I think what we're going to not do is try and just give a general overview of everything, because to be honest, there's been a lot of that in the market already. What we're rather going to do is actually dig into some of the specific points, but we do need to set the scene at least a little bit, right? So let me maybe start by asking you if you feel like my gut feel is on the money. Is this more of a pro-growth type budget? It somehow feels to me like they're being a bit nicer these days to businesses, to the middle class. Would that be a fair assertion?
Yeah, I'll summarize it in two ways. I think yesterday's budget is definitely the turning point type of narrative that we see. It sees a lot of stabilizing of debt, where we saw that from next year onwards, we definitely should see a decrease in the debt to GDP ratio, where it's going to peak at about 78.9%. And then obviously, as you said, definitely pro-growth with changes to the thresholds, which is something that we've been waiting for quite long. But I think it has a little bit of excitement, but at the same time, it's actually also a boring budget. But in this environment, a boring budget is actually a good budget. And then obviously the main talking point, while it's also probably good for growth and good for the man on the street, is just the withdrawal of the bracket creep that they actually said they will be implementing last year for the next 2 years. So, I mean, that's very positive for people to see. And then generally just also has a culture of better savings, looking to increase the thresholds there. So I think it's generally a budget that was well received by the public.
Yeah, it feels like we're in a better macroeconomic environment now than we have been in a very long time. And obviously that takes some of the pressure off, right? Because at the end of the day, the budget is the income statement for our government. And if the economy is not doing well and investment is not coming through, then obviously there's more pressure on the fiscus. And because we do have a somewhat left-leaning, somewhat socialist government where there's a lot of social grants, there's a lot of support for the poor, you end up in a scenario where they have to then squeeze more from this very small tax base. That's certainly been the narrative for as long as I can remember, literally. I guess at the moment, things like commodities, for example, are helping, right? I mean, you've literally got money coming out the ground right now in gold, in PGMs. Our tourism has been doing well, is just another example. It feels like things are doing better in South Africa, and maybe this budget reflects that.
Yes, I mean, macro-wise, when you look at the budget review document, they predict growth of 1.6% in 26 and going up to 1.8 and 2% up in 2028. So it's still not shooting the lights out, but it does at least, I mean, this comes off a very low base where we were looking at growth south of 1%. So this is the point. As soon as we can get the economy growing, we can increase tax revenue, and we can definitely see that the increased tax revenue will lead to, well, hopefully in the future, better use of that tax revenue, and thereby just growing the economy organically and therefore obviously growing the tax base, which we've always said is the most important. So as you've said, I think you have to highlight what the commodities are doing. That is a very important factor here. It is very cyclical. It's not something that will remain there forever. So while that is a positive sentiment and while we're getting good money from it, I think the tax is going to do well. But yeah, I think the big picture from this budget is relief where it counts. It's definitely support for small businesses, and it's a pivot to stability. That is the essential part.
Pivot to stability is a nice way to put it. I like it. And also just describing it as boring. Like you say, boring is good. And people forget when it comes to economic growth, when you're in a slow growth environment, if your country is expected to do 1% and then suddenly it's expected to do 1.5%, it's actually growing 50% faster than before. It's like that law of small numbers. You know, 1.5% is 50% bigger than 1% in terms of growth. It's 50 bips more. It makes a huge, huge difference. And that's why we've got to try and actually extract this growth so that everyone can benefit. And it comes through in things like, as you described it there, bracket creep. So for those who are maybe not familiar with the term, my understanding is for years, a good few years, we haven't really had an increase in the brackets for personal tax. And so people's salaries go up with inflation, in theory at least. but your effective average tax rate goes up because the brackets haven't moved with inflation, right? But now they've actually moved them. So have they done a proper catch up of the past few years in this move, or have they just given a little bit of year-on-year relief?
Yeah, let me just give an analogy, maybe just for the listeners so that they can maybe better understand, because this past weekend, we've got the SA Open Golf at the moment. And let's just use that as an example. Let's say you go play Stellenbosch Golf Club every week. You're teeing off of the same markers. You're very consistent off the tee and going into the green for two. And then you arrive there one day and you see it's been the SA Open. The tee box is right at the back with the new pros and they've put the tee box there. And all of a sudden you hit the same tee shot and you're sitting with the position. You're just like, well, I can't make it to the green. And that's pretty much what bracket creep is, right? It's just that little...
I love that.
It's a little bit of a sneaky way of getting a little bit more tax out of you. And it's a sneaky way because it gets it from a number of people. So once again, let's use an example. I earn 300,000 Rand per year. I get an inflationary increase of 6%. Well, let's just say inflation is 6%. That actually puts me in the same position I was last year from a purchasing point of view. I can only buy the same amount of goods with this increase. But now they didn't change the brackets. So the tax that I will pay on the increase, this new, the 318 Rand salary after my increase, will actually be slightly higher. And that is the impact. So your tax on that is just that little bit more. And it's very small. But once again, if you take a little bit of each and every single person, it just leads to a significantly more income to the fiscus. And then I think the point is the brackets were only adjusted for 3.4%, because as we know, with the Saab trying to cap the inflation rate nearer to the 3%, that is what they believe inflation is now. But it is interesting to note, I mean, that's not everyone's inflation. I mean, your high earners, their inflation is significantly higher because, I mean, they're buying different goods. But yeah, it is a bit of a relief. It's not significant, but it's at least something.
I love the golf analogy. It is exactly that, right? It's like one year you're arriving for the club champs and the next day you are suddenly playing against Ernie Els. That's certainly what it's felt like for the past decade, is like teeing off against Ernie. It still feels a bit like that, but maybe it's starting to get better, which is nice. Another area where I think they've given important relief, and specifically as a small business owner, I think this is really important, is that VAT registration threshold. It used to be R1 million a year in turnover. Now, most business owners will tell you that R1 million a year turnover is really not a lot. That's not R1 million a year profit. That's not gross margin. It's turnover. So that's before any of your expenses whatsoever. R1 million a year revenue is not a big business in any way, shape, or form. And yet there was this requirement to then go and register for VAT. Now, that might not sound like a big deal. And for businesses that are supplying other VAT registered businesses, it's not a big deal because your customers just claim back the VAT. It's not the end of the world. But if you are a consumer facing business, you are essentially the last step in the chain. And that's how VAT works. It's value added tax. So it just keeps on growing through the value chain until you hit someone who's not VAT registered. And that person is basically suffering all the VAT and can't claim it back. But if you are supplying people who are not VAT registered and you suddenly have to register for VAT, you are basically having 15% ripped out of your income and going to the government, which on turnover of R1 million a year is a little bit insane. So I was personally happy to see, as someone who has small businesses at heart all the time, that they've increased that threshold quite a lot, right? I mean, it's up significantly now.
Yeah, so the threshold moved up from 1 million to 2.3 million in annual turnover, as you pointed out. And what is important to note is that this was last amended in 2009. So that's 17 years ago. So, this had to happen.
It's insane, right? It's so long. 17 years.
I'm a homeowner, so I also have people coming across needing to fix things every now and then. And every time someone adds that 15% to your bill, then you feel, oh, you can actually feel that tangibly. You can feel in your pocket. So hopefully you get to a position where the smaller business that we sometimes use don't need to register. They're not adding the 15% on top of it. And maybe that at least means for them also some money in their pocket. But at the same time, if you're actually adding certain value, as you've said, you could claim certain inputs if you are registered for that. But that's not for all small businesses. So I think by lifting the threshold, Treasury is effectively removing certain businesses from the VAT net and just smaller businesses promoting them. And that means that there's less time for them on compliance. As you've pointed out, that is a significant cost for a small business who doesn't necessarily understand it. It results in more predictable cash flow. You're not having to claim inputs and throw outputs out. And I think it's the ability to price more competitively. So you're no longer carrying that 15%. you can compete against the bigger businesses if you don't need to add that. So I think it's a subtle acknowledgement of the economic reality. And I mean, that is inflation and rising costs have pushed the businesses up, that this million rand threshold is way too low and that the 2.3 million is more in line with what it should be. I mean, take note, it's 17 years. Yeah, it's more than double. But I think if you were to increase that with inflation, it probably would be even more. But at least it just shows you that they are looking into these types of things. And hopefully they will keep these thresholds and brackets and limits, and they'll just review them on a more regular basis, because there were quite a few of these thresholds that were changed in this budget.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 17 years to not go anywhere is absolutely bonkers. So, and as you say, it's the compliance burden, right? And also just SARS's behavior with VAT. If you throw a stone in a room full of entrepreneurs, I promise you'll hit someone who has waited for a VAT refund for an unreasonably long time. I've heard that story so many times. So it's nice to hear that that is improving. I think that probably gives us a nice sort of lay of the land of some of the really important changes. There are many more, and we'll obviously touch on some of them now. But something that keeps coming up, and now that we are in earnings season, I'm seeing it again. Basically, every consumer-facing business in the country right now, when they talk about the macroeconomic environment and what's happening to their sales, et cetera, they keep raising this point around online gambling and gaming. And there's a piece of me that thinks that, at least to some extent, it's a convenient scapegoat, but there's also an element of truth to it. People are spending a fortune on this stuff. It is an extractive industry, essentially. It's not leading to employment of South Africans, et cetera. The money's going overseas. It feels like an easy place for government to actually have a go here. It's practically would be a sin tax, right? So I'm curious about what their thinking is on actually taxing and getting their fair share of this. And maybe if it was actually taxed properly, then it would be slightly less appealing for people and they would spend a little bit less on online gambling and gaming and a little bit more in our economy, which is ultimately what creates jobs.
Yeah, so let's just maybe take a step back to just what is it? I mean, it's a national online gambling tax, and it's looking to tax 20% on the gross gambling revenue, what they refer to as the GGR, which is the net amount that these institutions receive less what they pay out. Now, this is on top of existing provincial gambling taxes, which can range between like 5 and 9%. What's interesting from Treasury's discussion document is that they say this is not a revenue driver. This is just to stop the social harms and discourage problem gambling. And that is, as you mentioned, there's a lot of talk about people using grants to gamble, students using the amounts that they receive to gamble. And I mean, that's not sustainable. But I think where we are with the process, so Treasury has released the discussion paper. It's actually the public comment closed on Friday. And following that, they will then relook at the public comments and then try to draft a bill around it. And then that's also open, once again, the draft legislation to public comment to see whether it fulfills. But I wanted to talk maybe just about whether this actually will work. Because once again, as you stated, we're trying to discourage online gambling. The Treasury said it's not a revenue driver, it's to discourage. But the problem is, shouldn't you regulate first and tax second? Because if we take an example of smoking, they did a lot more around the behavior change and then tax thereafter. They regulated the way they advertised. They regulated where you could smoke. So maybe you should first look at those elements, and then if need be, then you say, yes, okay, let's add the sin tax. And then the further point is, this is a tax that's proposed on the actual corporate entity and not on the individual. If you're trying to change behavior, you should actually do more of taxes on individuals. Sin tax is a tax on the product that the people use, then they don't want to use it. So shouldn't you maybe be looking at certain withholding taxes on either winnings or on the amounts that they're betting? That will maybe look at changing the use of it. So I think the first point that Treasury should look at is just the regulation around gambling and the effective policing thereof. And thereafter, maybe looking at, okay, let's see if we can tax. But the other point is, I know Treasury's aspect, they say it's not a revenue driver. I don't believe it. All taxes in South Africa are revenue drivers. We look at the sugar tax in the past. It had a nice story around it of trying to help people to live better lives. You just look that all that money just goes into pot for the fiscus and they use it. They don't do specific targeted use of that. So that's just my view.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's a really interesting point there. Taxing the corporate, not the individual, does talk to behavior. And maybe government is not that worried about the behavior. I have sometimes had these debates with people where they say, oh, you know, it's so terrible that someone gambles online. And obviously there are extremes, you know, taking your social grant and gambling online is clearly a no-no. But I don't know so much that it's so terrible that if you would have spent 100 rand on clothes you actually don't need, or you spent that 100 rand entertaining yourself online betting on your favorite soccer team. I mean, it's $100 out the door on something you didn't need anyway. Like, is it really so terrible? You know, within reason, it's okay. And so I guess it's like anything. People want to entertain themselves. They want to have fun. And much as it might irritate the clothing retailers that they're not selling quite as much in the way of clothing, like I say, an extra item of clothing in the cupboard versus entertaining yourself, is it really so different? So government seems to be saying, well, we're going to see where this thing lands. And what we really want to do is just plug the tax hole, because that's where it is a problem. If someone goes and buys local clothing, there's a whole value chain, right? There's tax, there's earnings here. Government gets a slice of that. But you go and you swipe your card and you gamble overseas, the money's gone.
I think there's been studies, though, that this isn't necessarily in our environment only for recreational purposes. And people actually in South Africa gamble with the belief that they can get themselves out of poverty and win a big amount. And that is the problem that we have. So it's actually more of an education aspect also in line with that.
Yeah, that's very fair. There's a huge percentage. Like you say, maybe the trick is there actually almost needs to be this regulatory piece where there's lots of education, maybe showing people that actually, you know, you're much more likely to lose than win here. This is not actually an income. This is an entertainment. That probably does need to happen out there. And hopefully it will. That's going to be an interesting thing to see in years to come. In the meantime, of course, SARS is very focused on making sure we have more taxpayers, which obviously just spreads the burden out. And there was an interesting comment that I know you wanted to talk about, which was around, and I quote, supported by new technology, they registered 1.3 million new taxpayers across various tax categories. And this piece was interesting, engaged with social influencers to facilitate tax compliance. I did have a small laugh at that. I kind of imagined someone doing an Instagram video and then it's like the SARS logo in the background, you know, brought to you by SARS, please also register for tax. I'm not really sure how this is working in practice, but I was curious on your thoughts on that one.
No, I thought you'd like that, Ghost. But yeah, so the important part there is that the registration of the 1.3 million new taxpayers actually brought in 4.9 billion in additional revenue. And yes, Treasury did mention an aspect about content creators and influencers, but what we must also understand is there are some people in the country that should be registered, maybe people from abroad that don't know their tax resident. And I've had a few of those as clients that arrive on my doorstep saying SARS knocked on their door because they purchased a property. They're now on SARS's radar. And all of a sudden, when I look at the facts, I see, oh, but you've been resident in the country for quite a while and you owe them quite a significant amount of tax. So it just shows that SARS's technology and the administration is working well and that the extra amount that Treasury provided to them in the budget last year is being used well when we look at investment into technology. And yeah, I mean, the point around influencers, content creators, it's something that has been in the media and it's quite topical. These people are definitely subject to tax. And what is interesting, though, is that they might be subject to tax on the product that they receive in kind or the services that they receive in kind. And sometimes when you promote a product, I mean, you are actually paid physical money. So definitely that is something that those people should be registered. They should be paying provisional tax and they should be filing a tax return. So it just goes again to show, to just educate the public and to tell people that there are taxes that they should look into. But I think, once again, I'm very impressed with SARS under Edward Kiesewetter. I know he's ending his term now in April and we don't have any guidance on who would be new, but they at least taking over a ship that seems to be sailing in the right direction with regards to the use of technology, AI and those types of aspects. So yeah, I think it's something positive.
Amazing what happens when you put a commercial person in charge, right? But that does make sense. It's less about using social influencers to actually achieve the registrations, but rather to go after the influencers themselves. Maybe that's the trick. It's like, hey, we'll work with you. We'll pay you in order to get some people to register for tax. And as you say, yes, they're like, ha, gotcha. You should be paying tax because clearly this is your business. Anyway, you got to love it. Tashas, let's talk about some of the other relief that actually came through in this budget. There was one that made me very happy, which was the tax-free savings account contributions on our hire. And I always say to people, if you're going to get just one thing right every year, just please max out your TFSA. And not everyone can do it, but what you should absolutely not be doing is dabbling in single stocks and everything else. If you haven't even maxed your TFSA, it is literally the government giving you this walled garden to go and build up your ETF exposure over your lifetime. You can chop and change between the ETFs with no tax. You're basically turning yourself into a little fund manager. You just have to stick to ETFs. You're not allowed to buy single stocks. Like, it's such an absolute no-brainer. And I was happy to see that that contribution's gone up.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, as you said, max it out for yourself, max it out for your spouse, max it out for your kids is definitely a no-brainer. So that increased from an annual limit of 36,000 Rand per year to 46,000 Rand per year. But what is interesting is that they didn't change the lifetime limit. So that is still limited to 500,000 Rand that you can invest in your lifetime. But that does just change the timing. It now would take you less than 11 years if you're doing it on an annual basis to get to that. And then, yeah, there are many studies that show if you're able to leave that, if you start very early, or even if you start for your kids and you leave it when your kids, for example, reach retirement age, they can pretty much retire off that amount. That's how compound growth will really work. But what I wanted to talk about was just how it's kind of hidden away, but there was some targeted relief to your higher earners. Because like I said, not everyone, as you said, can afford the tax-free savings account and the full contribution to it, but also the retirement contribution deduction cap was also lifted from 350,000 Rand to 430,000 Rand. And once again, not everyone can get close to that, but it just shows that there is definitely a bit of a giving back to the higher earner if they're willing to save. So if you look at it, it says if you earn more, then Treasury wants you to save more. And if you can build capital, do it locally. So do it in our TFSAs, do it in our retirement. And then it's just a structured, incentivized financial discipline rather than a blunt tax break. So they're not just saying we're going to give relief and keep the higher earners here. We actually do it through providing them additional methods to save in South Africa.
And it's great to see. Look, the one thing with the tax-free savings cap, and I've seen a lot of this as well, and people are quite rightly saying, hey, where's the increase in the cap? But of course, if you do the maths, this thing was, I think it's been around for like 11 years, as you said. So you couldn't actually have reached the cap yet mathematically, but we're going to get there in the next couple of years. And then obviously Treasury will have to look at increasing the cap, right? Otherwise, they basically are punishing people who started really early, which would be silly behavior.
I mean, if you listen to the comments by Treasury, they're saying that I don't know whether they're going to raise it. I think they're going to keep it there for quite a while because you're still getting that tax-free growth. And yeah, so hopefully I do agree that in the future they should, but it's probably going to be everyone reaches the cap and they'll probably leave it for a couple of years thereafter before really looking at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the one thing that's really interesting is, as you say, they're trying to encourage you to grow your capital here in South Africa, but they've also made it easier to take money out the country now, haven't they? They've actually given some more relief in that as well.
Yeah, well, that's an exchange control change. So as we know, you can flow capital out of the country, but it is subject to certain rules and regulations, specifically monitored by the Reserve Bank through the authorized dealers, which are the commercial banks. And one of those were that on an annual basis, without obtaining any form of tax clearance certificate, you could take 1 million rand out the country. But now they've actually pushed that up to 2 million. So that's also positive. I mean, once again, this is not aimed at everyone. This is people trying to really hedge their bets and maybe get some money, hard currency offshore. So that is also just positive. It's just a little bit of less administrative burden for those people just trying to flow money out.
And then a couple of other ones we should touch on before I let you go. I know donations tax saw a change, primary residence exclusion as well. Perhaps you can just take us through those.
Yeah. So donations tax, there was always a limit of 100,000. That's not subject to donations tax. That's lifted to 150,000 Rand. And yes, the one that, as I said, being a homeowner, the primary residence exclusion has lifted from 2 million to 3 million. I mean, okay, that's not necessarily for people owning houses in the Joburg market, probably won't help them much, but I know people in the Cape Town market will really love
that. Yeah, I joke. When I saw that, I joked with a friend. I was like, wow, you know, garden sheds in Cape Town are now out of the net. How exciting. I mean, it is a bit of a joke how ridiculous the property markets are across the two cities, but it was high time that they increased their primary residence exclusion, let's be honest. I would say your Joburg property is now basically a tax-free asset from a capital gains perspective.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
If you can only put in the tax-free savings account, then it'll be the same.
Yeah, essentially. So look, the overview of this thing, like I said at the start, it really does feel like it's a pro-growth budget. We're giving relief to people where government has historically been squeezing them. And that's what's so interesting. And I mean, you and I both do it because it's just how we've been conditioned. It's like, oh, you know, it's good news on tax-free savings. And we know that not everyone can afford it, but it's good news because everyone is so browbeaten into always thinking about, you know, how on earth do we help people who have nothing at the expense of the middle class? And the truth of it is you can only do that for so long. And it actually starts to have the opposite effect because you cannot squeeze the middle class into not working poverty. I mean, obviously people still have way better quality of life than those who are genuinely on the breadline, obviously. But you do squeeze them into a point where they're not having as many kids and they're not spending and they're not doing all of this kind of thing, which actually grows the economy. I think something like Curo becoming essentially a nonprofit organization is a cautionary tale for the middle class in South Africa, where people have immigrated and or are having fewer children. Yes, it's a global phenomenon, but this tax squeeze is part of it. And so for me personally, just seeing stuff like this is really encouraging, because they are now giving tax relief to the people who are actually working, investing, and then creating jobs for others, which as a capitalist, as I am, makes me feel like that's the right thing for the country to be doing, so that we actually get people to see a future here, which I think they're starting to do, as opposed to a few years ago where it was looking pretty bleak. That's kind of my summary of the budget. I'd be keen to get your final thought, and then I'll let you go.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think South Africa is really poised for growth. It's ready to turn that corner. I've summarized like this before, and I'll maybe just reiterate. It's a budget where relief is where it counts. It supports small business, and it's a pivot to stability. I think that's clear cut. You can't get a better summary than that.
Absolutely. Tarsus, thank you so much for your time again this year. Really appreciate it. We are operating in an exciting place in the world at the moment, in my opinion. I'm pretty bullish on South Africa, and it's nice to see this kind of thing coming through. So well done to those in government who made it happen. I know who you are, and you know who you are. So congratulations to you. And Tarsus, if I don't get to do another one of these with you this year, I'll certainly see you for the budget next year, I'm sure. But perhaps later this year, we'll touch base on what's going on in the world of tax again.
Most definitely looking forward to it. Thanks, Ghost.
Ciao.